This is Bea Arthur, and you're listening to the Be the Change podcast, sponsored by Sonos. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Be the Change. This week's episode is called I Miss You, and it is dedicated to all the ones we've loved and lost before. Even though life is a challenging and beautiful thing that I love, and I want to keep everybody the courage and the conviction and the confidence to keep going. Sometimes it's really hard when we lost that person in our lives who does give us the confidence and the courage to keep going. So that's why this one is dedicated to all the ones we've loved and lost before. And this week we are talking to my good friend and one of my favorite founders of all time, Ms. Rebecca Soffer. Welcome, girl.
Thank you so much. It is just delightful to be here with you today.
Oh my god. So I gotta tell you all about this woman. Actually, why don't you tell them about yourself, because I'll go on.
Gosh.
And on.
Loaded question. Well, I am I'm a New Yorker, and by choice, which makes me crazy. And I run something called Modern Loss, which I co-founded with my friend Gabby Berkner in 2013, when each of us was massively pregnant. So, you know, you decide whether or not we're crazy. But anyway, the reason that I run this endeavor, which is called Modern Loss, and is not only a very vibrant web publication and community, and also now book, which is, you know, an active thing that you can hold that came out. And also we do live events. We are kind of active across all planes. The reason that I'm involved in any of this in the first place is because, you know, life just took a hard left for me, like it does for so many people. It's just, that's the way life goes. Mm-hmm. I mean, we make plans and whoever is up there or anywhere or down below or whatever laughs. Mm-hmm. And it certainly laughed at me, because I was 30 and I was on this career trajectory of becoming, you know, hopefully an established producer. I was a producer at the Colbert Report. I had just graduated from Columbia Journalism School. I was just really excited to build a life that was, at the moment, you know, in political satire and doing smart, you know, comedic journalism. I was excited to meet a partner and maybe have kids and maybe get a mortgage. And I wanted all those things. And I turned 30 and I went on a camping trip with my parents to a place where we went every year. It holds a lot of meaning to me. And on late at night, the night that we returned back from that trip, my parents dropped me off at my apartment. This was Labor Day 2006. I'm from Philadelphia originally, so they kept driving back to Philly. And in the 45 minutes between them dropping me off and me hugging my mom goodbye and not giving it a second thought, because I was supposed to see her in 6 days, she died. And she died because there was a terrible car accident, and both my mom and dad were in it, and she did not survive it. My dad did, but was, as you can imagine, terribly, you know, traumatized from losing the love of his life for the last 35 years. And to boot, very much fast forwarding, 3 years later, my dad died. He had a heart attack while he was traveling and didn't survive. So by the age of 34, I was, you know, I had no parents who were walking above earth, you know, above ground. And it was a very, very, very tough lesson in the stark realities of grief and what it's like to live with loss, which is, and I am generalizing here, but I feel confident in generalizing it when it comes to our culture, which is a lonely thing that is still very stigmatized, mm-hmm. that is still something that people want you to make them feel better about when you're talking about it with them, that can bring the record to a screeching halt, metaphorically, if you're at a cocktail party and you mention the word died or death or, you know, like any iteration of that, because people just don't know how to respond. For the most part, we don't do a good job of using this kind of language in a casual way, you know, as opposed to like in a sanctimonious way, like in therapy offices or therapy circles or religious communities or places where it's deemed appropriate to talk about this stuff. We don't do a good job of doing it in a casual way where it makes, you know, we give people an ongoing invitation to just like bring it up over a plate of fries mm-hmm. when you're on a date, because mm-hmm. this is life. Like, part of life, as you mentioned, is death. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if someone dies, someone's going to be grieving that loss.
Yes.
And why, you know, the answer to why me? Well, why not me? It happens to everyone, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be all of us, yeah.
You know, I was faced with this, like, very isolating experience during a period in my life when I was focused on building my life. And it was just, like, so tough to navigate both of those realities. Mm-hmm. And so after several years, you know, Gabby and I became friends and saw this white space in the world of, you know, grief talk, which was, you know, something that really addressed this conversation in that way. And also, you know, to be honest, with a heavy dose of levity, because mm-hmm. I need to laugh. Yeah. I don't know about you, but, like, I will explode yeah. if I don't have some, like, laughter release on a regular basis.
Yes.
You just can't do that. You're just holding in too much energy.
Yes.
And grief is freaking funny. It is. It's ludicrous. I'm not saying I laugh at it. I'm just saying, if you can't recognize some of these very ridiculous moments when they happen, then, like, sometimes what do you have but that? Mm. You know, it makes you feel human again. It makes you feel like yourself again when you can have a good laugh. And so we want to help people across the long arc of it, you know, with what we do at Modern Loss online, in our book, you know, at our live storytelling events, and kind of show them that we're there for them every step of the way after a loss. It's not just that first year-long period of time where society likes to think that that's the toughest yep. time. Mm-hmm. We're there for you year two, which sometimes can be crappier than year one. Mm-hmm. We're there for you year 26. You know, like, if you lost your mom when you were a kid and now all of a sudden you're becoming a mom, your grief is going to be triggered in ways in which you never experienced it 10 years beforehand.
Yeah, right.
And we're with you. Like, we've got you. Mm. And we can do it and also have a potty mouth at the same time. So that is, a big part, not all of who I am. And it certainly was not what I would have chosen for myself as a little girl. But it is what it is. And so I'm doing what I can with the hand that I've been dealt.
We don't have a live audience here at Be the Change, but I'm going to give it up because this is why. So most of the times we do have a therapist joining me, a guest co-host, but nobody knows the narrative of what it's like to lose someone in the modern age better than you. And when I first met Rebecca and Gabby, obviously we were connected because I do the therapy thing, and this was years ago. Remember those mm-hmm. days?
Yep.
This is mad long
I was
ago.
Popping Tums. I was like 9 months pregnant.
This was my favorite story. Y'all were my favorite because life and death go together. They yeah. were literally both pregnant yeah. and, you know, mourning. And Gabby has a, you know, her parents died with very violently. And so just facing all these things, and I never flinched, because as a therapy, I'm trained to never flinch. Like, it's not useful for both of us to be sad. And for the most part, I've always thought that I could do really well with grief situations, but I had one client that reminded me too much of myself, and I didn't want to see her sad. And that's when you'd say that people always say the wrong thing. Like, for me, it was just like, we're gonna tough through this, you know, when she needed different care. And you need different levels of care and different kinds of care at every part, day one, year 20. One of my favorite things about their live storytelling events, the last one went at the JCC, which was really meaningful because, like she said, this is the New York City girl. Zabar sponsored yeah. it was
pretty great.
Shout out to Zabar's, because I'm city girl.
You know, for context, like, we don't sit around and suck our thumbs right. at our live storytelling events. And we have people, you know, we had Katie Rich, who is, you know, she writes Weekend Update for Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. We had Nora McInerney, who does, you know, Terrible Thanks for Asking, and Jason Gore from mm-hmm. Upright Citizens Brigade. And we do that, you know, I do that on purpose mm-hmm. because I don't want people to think of loss and assume that it has to be something that they're scared to consider. You know, I don't want people to think of grief and think that something's wrong with them mm-hmm. because they're still struggling. I want people to say, oh, if, like, a person on SNL is talking about what it's like to lose their mom, mm-hmm. Maybe it's okay if I talk about it too.
Exactly.
You know, same with our book. You know, we have Mindy Kaling on our cover, gave us our blurb, which is still, like, crazy
amazing.
To me, but
well
it's like
deserved.
You know, that's yeah sure, it's like super cool, like Mindy Kaling, like, who doesn't love her? But it's very purposeful. It's, you know, if you see a book on grief and you're like, I'm so scared of that, like, let right. me throw that under my bed. No, but this one has oh, I think Mindy Kaling's really cool. Oh, she reads books on grief. Oh, maybe something is not wrong with me. Like, maybe I can read this too. Maybe the water is not freezing and it's okay to come on in.
Ugh. And that's why it's so important, because as a therapist, people are unprepared for life, right? And we don't give them the skills or the tools.
I certainly am.
And everybody in this room is, including the homie eyes. Actually, Isaiah's probably the only one who's got it all.
He looks like he has it together. Yeah, he's pretty great. Quite honest.
He's the only person on time today. But but also, I feel like that we're especially unprepared for death. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it feels so wrong. That's why nobody knows what to say. That's why, I mean, humans are animals. We are supposed to be able to take care of each other, and we don't know how. So that's why I love what you do. Like I said, my favorite one, I mean, y'all have so many good ones, but this older gentleman at the JCC event said, you know, it still hurts every fucking day.
Oh, yeah, that was a great one.
Losing his wife. And just that is a really great place to center yourself, because I think people want, because when we talk about narrative therapy, our minds want a beginning, middle, and end. Mm-hmm. But grief is ongoing.
I mean, it's easier to think about it like that, right? It's so much more comfortable. I would love it if there were this textbook ending, if this word closure were not a complete myth. But the word closure is a myth. It doesn't exist. It's just a, you know, we write about it in a book. It's just...
Even in relationships. Yes. Yeah, thank you for saying this.
Like, we're human people. We don't, like, cease to be when an experience comes to a close. You know, we're still reverberating.
They form us.
An
it's
experience.
In us.
Of course.
You're different because of these.
My
things.
Loss has formed me very deeply. I mean, it's formed me. It's informed my life in ways that, sure, of course, I would not have chosen. Like, I wouldn't have chosen for my two very small children to not have either of my parents around to be their grandparents and to witness me becoming a mom and give me advice and maybe come over and give me a freaking break sometimes and babysit. I don't have any of that. And it's never okay. Like, no part of that is ever okay. Right. At the same time, I think I'm more present as a parent because my parents aren't around. Mm. I think I'm really, you know, who knows what I would have been like, you know. But I actually have this feeling that, like, I'm very much more emotionally and physically present with them because I'm just, like, hyper aware that our time is, you never know. I'm aware of that.
That's an important
And lesson. I want to soak it up.
Yes.
I want to revel in the minutiae and in the tiny little moments, you know? And it's, you know, I'm not always like that. Sometimes I'm just like a neurotic New Yorker, like 76% of the time I'm a neurotic New Yorker. But, you know, I just want to say, like, grief can promote traumatic growth. I wish nobody had to go through loss, of course. But then we would all be immortal and the world would be super weird, you know?
Right.
It's just not the way it goes.
It would be really weird.
If we love anybody who is living, we're going to have grief. If we love a dog, we're going to have very real grief. This is all very real. Mm-hmm. And it goes on and it shapes, you know, it takes different forms, you know, throughout the rest of your life. And I don't necessarily define myself as grieving. You know, 10 years down the line or whatnot, I define myself as living with loss, though, every day. Just like that gentleman said, you know, we asked people in the audience to stand up and say a snippet of their grief experience in 6 words. So it's a 6-word memoir. And one guy got up, as you said, and said, it still hurts every fucking day. And this guy must have been like 70 years old. There were a lot of younger people there, but he was older. And everyone was like, yeah.
Yes.
It
yes,
really does.
That's the truth. Yeah, it was so real. And I love those things that you do. And everything you're saying is like so spot on. So that's why I think you're the best person. You know, like I always say, every emotion deserves equal respect, including pain. You know, we don't have to rush to the lessons, but we do need to honor the experience of our life and what it means to us. And so that's why I want to dedicate this episode to what it's like to live with loss. And thank you for joining me.
I mean, I'm never leaving this room. It's way too comfortable.
So
plus my back
here.
Is out.
Well, we got her in a nice chair, y'all. And so now that you know what a badass fucking Rebecca fucking Sofer is and how she's going to help us live our best lives and be present, we are going to have our first caller for the day and our only special caller for the day. Caller, go ahead and unmute. My name's B and I want to change your life.
Hi, B. My name is Kyle and I have a question for Rebecca.
Yes.
Basically, my grandmother, I was the favorite of the family, and she passed away 9 years ago. Unfortunately, during that time, I was really a workaholic and living far away from home. And her death completely caught me off guard. I actually found out in a really painful way when I tried calling her directly and found out that she wasn't, in fact, in a nursing home, as my mom told me, but she was actually in hospice. And so since then, I sometimes have dreams of her, and I just found it really difficult to live with or get over, I guess. And even as simple as I'm not able to enjoy Christmas, because that was mm-hmm. sort of her holiday. Mm. So I guess, like, what advice would you have in terms of coping with something that has happened so long ago?
Thank you. First of all, I'm very sorry for your loss. Before we get started, and we're going to take care of you today, I just want to say that even though I am a therapist and this is a therapy talk show, this is not licensed therapy, this is just advice, but we're totally here for you. So to that point, before we get started, what was your grandmother's name?
Elizabeth.
Well, Elizabeth, we miss you. And what would you say, Rebecca, when you're missing someone like that?
Well, Kyle, first of all, it sucks. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know what to say. You know, it's just... I'm so sad that you lost your beloved grandmom. I'm sure that, you know, as you say, you were the favorite, which is amazing. Like, that's not something I could ever define myself as being to my family. So please let me know how that feels. But I can only imagine that it must have been that so painful to lose somebody who you felt favored you. Mm-hmm. And I also love, B, that you asked Kyle for her grandmother's name. I think it's such a powerful thing to do. I think that we never, you know, so infrequently do we know what to say to somebody who's grieving. But in fact, the answers are very simple. Like, sometimes it's just in asking what that person's name was and inviting them to say it out loud. And you say your grandmother died 9 years ago. You probably don't get the chance to say her name out loud a mm-hmm. lot, huh? You know, my mom's name is Shelby, and she died more than a decade ago. I don't get to say her name out loud. So I just... want to say that, like, that's a really powerful thing. And also it's a very a great powerful little trick for you, Kyle, to say her name. It almost, for me, regardless of what you believe about what comes after death, you know, for me, it just conjures up someone's energy, you know, mm-hmm. and can mm-hmm. comfort you mm-hmm. and make you feel like they are, their memory is very mm-hmm. close to you. You know, I think in terms of it sounds like your question is, you know, how to deal with issues so far down the road that are still extremely painful. You know, when you talk about missing Christmas, and again, like as B said, I'm not a licensed therapist. I'm somebody who, you know, deals with narrative therapy, I guess that's what it's called. I do narrative storytelling about this topic and work with so many people who have had just a wide range of grief experiences. So I'm going based on what I've learned from them, from, you know, the real experts who are the people who live through it all the time, and also meeting so many incredible people who work at grief organizations and therapists, et cetera, over the years. But, you know, if you're not enjoying Christmas, I guess I would need a little more information, but if you are doing this in a family setting and it's still painful for you, I just, for me, something that helped me was sometimes switching up the setting. You know, I mean, I don't think that for the rest of your life it's going to be this painful, but it does sound like, again, I'm kind of guessing here, that your parents or your family kept some details from you about her demise when you thought she was in a nursing home and then you found out she was in hospice. So I don't really know what the communication lines are like between you and your relatives, but it sounds like sometimes they're not completely open. If you're still really dreading some of these trigger holidays, honestly, go on a vacation somewhere. Don't go 1 year. I mean, if you really don't want to do it, one of the best things I ever did was, you know, go literally to the country of Turkey over Thanksgiving, which, yes, mm-hmm. sounds really funny. But I didn't want to see all the familiar setup. I didn't want to see everything and realize that, like, my mom was the one missing. Mm. It was very painful. Now, it hasn't been like that every year. I mean, I enjoy holidays now. They're very bittersweet. But, you know, everybody is different. And if you have some years will be harder than others, and they'll take you by surprise. But, you know, I think if you're honestly still struggling, if you are still struggling to a real degree, nearly a decade later, there is a wonderful place called the Center for Complicated Grief, which is housed in Columbia University. And they do, you know, marvelous work with people who are still having like really major triggers as they move through their loss. So it's something that you might want to just like go to their website and see the kind of content they offer and see the services that they offer. But, you know, I think that for the most part, you should just go easy on yourself, because it sounds like you're not just dealing with her loss. You're dealing with the way in which you lost her. Mm-hmm. You said you were kicking yourself because you were a workaholic. It sounds like you're really racking yourself with guilt. And, you know, again, I'm guessing because I just heard your story for 1 minute. But, you know, you got to not feel guilty. You probably were supposed to be working. You sound like a pretty young person.
Well, how has it been for you over the holidays? Because you mentioned that your family kind of left you out of some of the information at the time. I'm curious if they still, you know, Christmas, they honor, you know, what Christmas meant to Miss Elizabeth, you know, creating new traditions. Is there something that, or have any of those things lived on in some of the Christmas traditions?
So I think at first, you know, there was a shared sense of grief mm-hmm. with across my family, mm-hmm. but after a couple of years, it was sort of they got uncomfortable when I would bring her up, mm. kind of like, why aren't you over it type of indication. And I have a wonderful family. They're very nice, but at the same time, they had kind of moved into a place where the holidays were meant to be enjoyable again. And I am still in a place where I'm not able to quite get there.
Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting. And that's a logical fear too, because it is a fear, right? That if you talk about something as uncomfortable as death, that people will say you're being a bummer. People say you're being negative, you know, and it's so important, because in all forms of loss, I work with a lot of women with infertility and consistent miscarriage issues. And, you know, obviously a lot of their friends are in the same kind of childbearing age. And, you know, people have straight up asked them after miscarriages, please don't bring that up. It's really bringing me down. I'm worried that it's contagious. And I think that that is definitely a logical fear. People think, oh, call me anytime. But it's true. Some people are not always here for it. So when that happens, I'm curious about what your reaction is when you sense that you're getting shut down, or that you may, or they'd rather you not mention it.
I try to put on a facade and kind of play along, but it's, you know, it breaks me inside. Yeah. And it makes me feel really alone.
Is there someone who you have, and you have to forgive me because I actually did not realize that the format was we could actually have an ongoing exchange with you. So I kind of made some assumptions. So it's really helpful that I know I can ask you questions. Do you have like a person in your family who you can really talk to? Like, do you feel that the group at large just wants to kind of move on? Is there any confidant you have who is present at these gatherings?
No, not really.
And I'm not sure that she should go to her family anymore for this if they've come up short.
I mean, to me, it sounds like, you know.
Well, let's let her go ahead.
Oh, honey. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say the only person that I think can really relate to me on this is my boyfriend, because he lost both of his parents when he was a teenager. And still holds on to so many of their possessions. But I think that that's really the only person.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's great to have someone who gets it more than somebody who is an expert in it. Like, one thing I love about Modern Loss is y'all always say that the tagline is, it's a club you never want to be a part of, but you're welcome anyway.
Right.
Yeah. And so I'm glad that your boyfriend can be a comfort. And honestly, I think because of the way that you described your relationship with your grandmother, that stood out to me that you were the favorite. It also stood out to me that you were a workaholic. Both of those things can be part of our identities, right? And but sometimes when we get into trouble is when we make it a definitive thing. So for example, like your professional identity was defining you, and then when you lost this very close person with you that you have a special bond with, then that part of your identity is taken away. So even though these things do form us and inform who we are and how we think and how we move in the world, it's important that we don't let it be definitive. You are still your grandmother's favorite grandchild. That does not change. The pain that you feel is because that is still alive and well in you. Every time you feel lost, every time you feel like there's no one else who could understand the way she could, that is still her love alive and well 9 years later. So I think it's really up to you to really kind of create new traditions and new ways to honor that memory in a way that feels good without requiring that anybody else engage in it. Because the reason you were her favorite is because y'all had a very special bond that other people couldn't relate to. And that doesn't die.
That's a great answer. And what I was going to suggest earlier is that, you know, what I have done, not necessarily like in advance of some holidays, but actually on holidays now, because my family is very small. Unlike you, I'm not going to like, you know, the house where there are tons of relatives. My family is actually me and now my husband and my kids. And so it's kind of all on my shoulders to create my new traditions or else I'm not going to have any. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, if your grandmother did special things around these holidays and your boyfriend has memories of his parents and what they used to love doing, and if they were those, you know, traditions and rituals were comforting to him, what you might consider is doing that.
That was very helpful. I appreciate the practical suggestions. I think so much of the time I just get in my own head and it's hard to feel like there's any kind of action I can take to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. That's another thing with loss. Because it's something that happens to us and is literally completely out of our control, it can feel like we're just passive and it just is like a wave that overwhelms us and we're powerless in it.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's ways to take it back. And again, like what you want, everything that feels like lack is because we want something. And what you still want is that relationship with your grandmother who you miss. And so you can still honor that in your own way, in private ways, with people that you trust, whether or not they are in your family or not. But I really think that it's up to you. And I think that that's what you would want, you know, with anything, especially when we talk about religion, it's always living in a way that's pleasing to this person that we worship, that we honor, that we love, that we miss. And, you know, whatever it is, those conversations that you have, you know, you think about what would she want, you know? I'm sure she misses you too. And it still is an ongoing relationship, even if that person isn't physically here. And that's what we want. How do we grow? Like, how does this inform? How does this make us move in the world? Live as if she's watching. What would make her happy? Right. You know, what would kind of like satisfy that, you know, what would be a balm to your soul on those days where it just feels like too much? Because she's still obviously with you 9 years later, and you never have to get over if you don't want to. It's really up about like what you can do to it. And, you know, and I think that sometimes when it is a special relationship, it's hard for other people to understand. That's not their fault. And so I also don't think you should want more than what your family's capable of. You know, the grieving process and the length is different for every single person, and it looks different for every single person. And this is the one thing that, like, you should, and I definitely encourage you to do it your way, like Rebecca said.
Yeah, you have to fly your flag. As long as it's not hurting you
yeah.
or anybody else, you just need to grieve in the way that you need to grieve.
Because like you said, it is making you lonely to try and do it by yourself.
And like what you said is just you know, what you said is really important. It's something, what you said, it's really important that we always talk about that just because someone dies, it doesn't mean your relationship is over. You can continue to have an evolving relationship with somebody, even if they're no longer alive. Mm-hmm, you have, you know, they're no longer physically present, but you can consider them in different ways. You can appreciate them in different ways. You can, you know, have their memory very, very present. One of my friends, Lucy Kalanithi, whose husband, Paul, wrote this wonderful book called When Breath Becomes Air, which was this big New York Times bestseller. He died when he was, I believe, 38 from lung cancer. He was himself a neurosurgeon. She wrote a New York Times piece about how, you know, she might be a widow, but she still considers herself married. Like he's still her husband. Mm-hmm. You're still the granddaughter. You will always be her granddaughter. And that is something that comforts me very much. There are groups that are, you know, they call themselves motherless. I prefer the term unmothered because I have a mom. She's just not alive. And for me, language is very important. And when I frame it like that, it makes me feel like she's present. It makes me feel like I still belong, like I still am connected to her. I'm not less. I'm just und, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
that makes sense. And I guess I agree with you. It does. I guess one thing that I can do is pay more attention to the way that the words that I'm thinking about her with, or the way that I describe our relationship. I do believe in the power of words.
Journaling is great, and you can also at any time write an entry in a dedication at modernloss.com. So there's so many ways, and I'm just really glad that you could call in and really honor this woman. So thank you so much for sharing her story and her memory. I will definitely remember this episode forever, Kyle. So thank you so much for letting us bring Elizabeth in this space with you.
Thank you. I appreciate for all that you guys had to offer.
Thank you very much. And for anyone else who's listening to the show and misses someone, please know that at any time you go to modernloss.com, the Center for Complicated Grief will list all of the resources at the end of the show. And if you are suffering, you can always go to thedifference.co and talk to one of our grief counselors within 30 minutes or less. So thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Rebecca Sofer.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me into this amazing new project.
Thank you. And shout out to Gabby also.
Hey, Gabby.
Out in LA. And thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you next time on Be the Change. This is the Be the Change podcast, recorded at Sonos Studios in New York City. Thanks for listening.